Hi, good morning. I'm Maura Ahrens-Mealy from blogher.com, the community for women who blog. And we are so honored today to be with HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, great to be with you.
Thank you. And I am here as an envoy of the blogher community. Thousands of women across America have submitted their questions for the secretary. So let's get started.
Okay.
Thank you so much. We know that there's a lot of good in the bill, but lots of our members, blogher members, Elisa, Virginia, Nordette, Lara, Catherine, Maria, left questions with some of the same tone, and I'll just reflect some of that. They use words like skeptical and frustrated with where this compromise bill has landed. It has no public option and no Medicare expansion. Nordette says, for example, I'm disheartened because this debate is about people like me, people who've watched their parents benefit from Medicare, and I'll never see any peace of mind where I can go to a doctor and not worry about a bill, not unless I win the lottery, she writes. And blogger Karen summed it up nicely. She said, and this is my question for you, what assurances can Secretary Sebelius give us that the Obama administration will make improving this bill a major priority?
Well, I think those are very real questions that lots of people are talking about around their kitchen tables and throughout this country. I think, unfortunately, some of the debate has gotten really lost in the process of some of the pieces of the puzzle and forgotten what the puzzle really looks like. And this bill, from the outset, the Obama administration has been about lowering costs, providing access for everyone. And I got to tell you, women are at the front of that line because women are most likely to be in jobs with no employer-provided health insurance. They're in an open market often where they get discriminated against legally, where an insurance company can charge sometimes five, six, seven times as much to a woman as to her male colleague of the same age because she might get pregnant someday, and they don't want to incur those bills. So underlying the health reform is a change in the whole system. Insurance company rules will change forever, and that's very good news. No more denying coverage for pre-existing conditions. So if you or your child is sick, you can't be locked out of the market. No more of these incredibly wide swings for gender discrimination. You will have to have insurance companies for the first time ever report on what's called medical loss ratios, how much money they're actually spending to pay medical bills and not on advertising and not on brokers and not on profits. And then in the new marketplace, which again is a huge benefit to women, entrepreneurs, self-employed women, women without employer coverage, they'll have someplace to shop, transparent, easy to compare rates, and a new set of rules. And there'll be some nonprofit companies competing with the private insurers in that market. So I would say there's a lot in this bill that will really move the ball forward for women. And yes, we will continue to work to get the best possible bill we can at the end of the day when the president signs it.
I hope so. Let's talk more about women because this has been a big talking point. Blogher members Stephanie and Joanne both asked questions about reproductive rights, which started in the House with the Stupak Amendment, and women's issues related to the bill. And Stephanie wants to know, what will the administration do to ensure women, and this solely affects women, aren't put at risk by the willingness of politicians to serve up abortion rights as compromise because the reproductive health of so many women is at stake?
Well, I certainly agree that the reproductive rights of women is an important issue. And from the outset, again, the president made it clear that this was not an abortion bill. It's a health care bill. And what was very important was to essentially maintain the status quo. And the status quo, which I know a lot of women don't like, but is the current law, is that federal funds are not used to provide abortion coverage except for some rare exceptions, except for when the life of the woman is in danger or rape and incest. Those are the only two, and that has been the public policy of this country for over a couple of decades. So that's really the goal of both the House and the Senate. Not some members. Some members would like to take a big step, I would suggest, backward to really ban not only coverage in with public funds, but to really reach into the private market and make choices.
Make it so hard to actually get these coverage.
And I would say that the Senate language, which was negotiated by Senators Barbara Boxer and Patty Murray, who are very strong defenders of women's health services and choices for women, take a big step forward from where the House left it with the Stupak Amendment. And I think do a good job making sure there are choices for women, making sure there are going to be some plan options, and making sure that while public funds aren't used, we are not isolating, discriminating against, or invading the privacy rights of women. That would be an accounting procedure, mm-hmm. but everybody in the exchange would do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Whether you're male or female, whether you're 75 or 25, you would all set aside a portion of your premium that would go into a fund, and it would not be earmarked for anything. It would be a separate account that everyone in the exchange would pay.
It's a bit confusing, but okay.
It is a bit confusing, but it's really an accounting measure that would apply across the board, and not just to women, and certainly not just to women who want to choose abortion coverage.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Thank you. Blogger E.M. Zanotti asks about the possibility of anything government-run. She says, the government seemed to have a difficult time managing the H1N1 situation. Now, I realize that the end result of this reform bill may not be a government-run or government-administered plan, but for the sake of allaying my fears, can you convince me that a government-managed healthcare system would be more efficient or different from what I've experienced at the hands of government in the past?
Well, I hope that at the end of the day, folks have a better view of the H1N1 situation than was just expressed, because I, at the front of the health response in that line, think it's pretty remarkable that from the time a virus was identified to the time we had vaccine available and getting shots in people's arm was 8 months, and that has never been done before in the history of this country. But to the healthcare bill, Medicare is a program that was created 44 years ago, and certainly seniors are enormously loyal to their Medicare benefits. It provides health security. It provides a sense that you will be able to go to a doctor, find the health care you need. That's a government-run program. Medicaid, which is a partnership between the federal government and states, again, provides essential services for the poorest Americans, for a lot of our most disabled folks. The VA system is a government-run program. The Department of Defense has one of the biggest health systems in the country, again, a government-run program. So there is a lot of evidence that government actually does a better job with overhead, provides benefits. Nothing in this new bill really is government-run in the way that I think some of the critics would like people to believe. No government is going to take over anybody's insurance plan. In fact, in the insurance exchange, the new marketplace, the vast majority of plans will be private companies. They'll just operate under new rules, and government's role will be oversight, making sure that companies deliver the benefits that are promised, don't lock people out of the market, don't charge excessive rates. And I think that's a very good role for government to play.
Okay, well, E.M., if you're watching, E.M. Zanotti, leave a comment on Blogger or Facebook and let us know what you think about the Secretary's answer. Jennifer at Tacoma Mama wants to know, along with Sarah, who had a similar question, what effect will a mandate have on the already fragile consumer economy? And what safeguards will be in place to make sure that health insurance plans provide full coverage in exchange for their premiums and, two, are not so expensive that families have to cut out other necessities to pay for their premiums?
Well, Jennifer, that's a great question, and I know there's been a lot of concern about affordability that the President had, that the House and Senate have both had. So at every step along the way, looking at what is reasonable for a family to pay, what portion of income. The good news is that the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has said that premiums in this new plan would be more affordable than premiums are currently on the market for the same coverage, so you'll be paying less. Low-income workers and families will get some assistance, a subsidy to actually buy coverage. Small business owners will have a 50% tax credit to buy coverage, so there are not only more affordable premiums at the outset, but then some help paying for them. I think the reason that the mandate is so important, that everybody has to be in, is what we can't have is a system where you only buy insurance when you get sick. So you have what's, you know, a bad risk pool, everybody with cancer, everybody with a heart condition. then the costs are enormous. What insurance is really about is sharing the risk. You might get sick and I might not, but we both pay into a system to allow us to balance that risk. If only the sick people are in the pool, then it's going to be totally unaffordable, or companies will just go out of business because they can't pay the coverage. So if you're going to provide insurance to everybody, you really need everybody in the pool from the outset, particularly the young, healthy folks who sometimes opt out saying, oh, I'll just wait, I'm never going to get sick. I'm the parent of two 20-year-olds and they think they're invincible, but it's they and their friends who we really want to begin being part of this marketplace.
So in the new system, after they come off their parents' insurance, then they have to buy in to the system on their own?
Well, if they work for a company who provides coverage, that's a way to be there. If they're out on their own, yes, they would have an individual mandate. But again, depending on the income level, they would have a series of choices of a scaled down plan that would be relatively inexpensive to a more robust plan if you had a family and wanted a lot of services. You'd also have an option that doesn't exist right now where young Americans can be kept on their parents' coverage up to the age of 26. Again, in this marketplace, when a lot of people are back in graduate school or they have jobs which don't have health coverage, the best way to provide ongoing insurance is really to stay on your parents' plan. But right now, most companies cut you off. So that's also expanded in this pool. And I know in our situation, that would have been enormously helpful for our sons.
Jeremy wants to know about tort reform. He asks, are the rumors of a backroom tort deal true, and why aren't there any tort reforms tied into healthcare reform?
Well, Jeremy, there actually are some measures that would make it aimed at patient safety, aimed at getting claims to injured victims paid in a much more timely fashion, and actually putting a doctor and an injured patient together from the outset, the sort of SORI works program, the so-called plan that has been in place in Michigan and other areas that President Obama supported in the United States Senate. In our Department of Health and Human Services, there's been authority to move ahead on some of those projects for years, but no president has ever done that. So the president actually called on me and our agency to put out some pilot projects to look at what works in the country, and there are everything from courts that look at mediation ideas to the Michigan system, which has dramatically lowered lawsuits and paid victims on a more timely basis, and anything else that actually is aimed at lowering error rates and paying people more quickly and making sure that doctors don't have to continue to look over their shoulder for defensive medicine. So those grants are out right now. They're about to get underway. The president didn't leave tort reform to be a leverage in the healthcare bill. He thought it was important enough to move ahead right away. And there's some measures in both the House and Senate bills that, again, accelerate those ideas and codify those ideas.
Okay, but separate from the larger healthcare reform bill?
Well, the healthcare bill actually would put some of these systems in place more permanently. But again, we moved out ahead of the healthcare bill. When the president addressed the members of the House and Senate, he charged me with the next day going back and figuring this out. So we actually have begun the process of putting programs in place around the country.
Shaolin Mama has a question about this being a starter home plan. She wants to know, if the bill is a starter home plan, then what does version 2.0 look like? And is there a timeline or plan of action as to what the next priorities would be? She says, what can I look forward to since I'm not sure that this one is going to do anything for my family right now?
Well, again, I would suggest that while there has been some focus on the individual negotiations, there is a huge amount to be gained by the passage of this bill. And it doesn't mean that the bill will be perfect at the end of the day. So I think it will be a work in progress. Starting in 2010, insurance company rules will begin to change immediately. No more lifetime caps on coverage. Right now, if you get cancer and are halfway through a chemotherapy treatment, it's possible for your insurance company to say, that's it, you've run out of benefits, and stop them. That will cease to exist. You won't be able to be dumped out of the marketplace. If you got sick, the company has to renew your policy the next year. They can't deny it. Preventive services will begin to be paid for immediately, 2010, not when the exchange.
Talk a little bit about that.
Getting rid of a lot of the co-pays for everything from wellness checkups to immunizations for kids. Seniors will no longer have to pay co-pays for their Medicare screenings for colon cancer and mammography. The donut hole, the wall that seniors hit right now where they don't get any additional assistance for prescription drugs, will start to be closed, and there'll be a discount immediately. I'm talking all of this is 2010, you know, next year, right around the corner. Companies will have to begin immediately to report on how much money they're spending to pay claims, how much they're spending on overhead, transparent, easy to read. You'll be able to really pick and choose. And for the Americans right now with pre-existing conditions who are totally locked out of the marketplace, there'll be a high-risk pool. It won't be the best plan in the world. It won't be what the marketplace will look like eventually, but there will be a safety net for folks who don't have coverage now, are desperate for coverage. So over the course of the next couple of years, there's a lot that will be phased in. The other thing that I think the BlogHer community should be interested in is a lot of the underlying features of the health reform bill also move us from a sickness focus to a wellness focus. So right now, there is an enormous amount of money spent on chronic conditions and acute illness. 75 cents of every dollar is spent when people get very sick. What we think is much more cost-effective and actually leads to a much healthier nation in the long run is a focus at the outset on healthcare, on wellness care, on preventive care. So getting everybody a health home, seeking preventive care for kids, making sure that women get screenings and checkups on a regular basis, help prevent diabetes, help prevent cancer, help prevent some of the diseases that we spend lots of money on right now. And that's all part of this package.
That's good. That actually, Sarah Granger, who wants you to know that she is originally from Kansas.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Although now I think she's in California, and I don't know if she's up because it's really early there. She actually asked how long it would take us to catch up with European countries in our programs in preventative care. She's really interested in preventative care.
Well, Sarah, that's a great question. There was a study done recently, which I found really alarming, where 19 nations were compared in terms of various kinds of preventable illnesses and how well we're doing. America wasn't at the front of the pack. We weren't at the middle of the pack. We were dead last in terms of how well we're doing with the health of our nation. And if we look at long-term prosperity of our country, we have to have a competitive workforce and we have to have a healthy workforce. So the dollars that we're going to shift and spend on health and wellness, on preventive care, on getting everybody a health home. One of the things that happens right now, Maura, is too many people wait until they're very sick to seek care because they don't have a doctor. They don't have a way to get care. They come through the doors of an emergency room in sicker and more acute and, frankly, more expensive condition. All of us who have health insurance pay an additional $1,000 a year for that care, which is inefficient, ineffective, and doesn't really provide the kind of prevention. So having a health home for everybody, having an opportunity to get preventive and wellness care, paying doctors to keep their patients well instead of paying them for the number of tests they do and the number of procedures is a big part of this puzzle. Having health homes where there's follow-up care.
Is that like a primary care physician?
It's a primary care physician, and we're beginning to shift the payment rates so that right now specialists get 3 to 4 times what a primary care doc gets paid. You make more as a doctor if your patient's in the hospital than if your patient is in his or her home. You make more based on how many tests you order as opposed to avoiding those tests in the first place. So some of what is in the underlying bill is really beginning to change the financial incentive so that we encourage more health, more wellness. Medicare, for instance, will pay for someone to go to the hospital and have a foot amputated in a severe diabetic situation, but not the four or five steps that could have prevented that amputation in the first place. So there's a lot about this system that requires a real shift in focus and attention.
Real quick, let me just loop back, because you mentioned screening, and yes, that's been a huge issue in the news. It's something women are very concerned about. Talk about what screening and women's cancer screening will look like in the new health reform system.
Well, the new system will look very much like the old system, with a huge step forward. A third of the women in America don't get screened at all. We have a situation where mammography is not routinely used by a third of American women, which is a very dangerous situation to be, either because they have no insurance coverage at all or because their coverage doesn't focus on mammography. So that's a gap that we need to close, and this bill closes. As you mentioned, there was a report out from one advisory committee who suggested that routine screening with no health history for women 40 to 50 was not advisable. Our national cancer scientists, who are oncologists who focus on this day in and day out, say they would disagree with that science, and they think that over 40, once every couple of years, you really should get a mammography screening. We are going to continue to pay benefits exactly the way we have, so Medicare won't change, Medicaid won't change. And the best advice is to have a conversation with a healthcare provider. Have a conversation with your doctor about your history, your body type, your situation. Too many women don't have a doctor, and that's what this bill is about.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you, Secretary Sevelius.
Great
really
to see you.
Appreciate it on this snowy day. And thank you so much to the Blog Her community and folks here in the Executive Office Building. Thanks very much.